Blog Talk Radio.
You and your whole lousy generation believe the way it was for you is the way it's got to be. And not until your whole generation has lain down and died will the dead weight of you be off our backs. You understand? You've got to get off my back. I think of myself as a man. Now, I've got a decision to make. And I've got to make it alone, and I've got to make it in a hurry. So, would you go out there and see after my mother?
Folks, this is the Afro Nerd, and as you might have guessed, we had some technical difficulties. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a quick jammy jam and try to get some things straightened out behind the scenes. Again, this is Afro Nerd Radio, the Midweek Review Edition. My apologies for the delayed response, but unfortunately, these things do happen. It's a combination of my own system and perhaps Block Talk. What can you do? I'm going to try to contact the captain as well. We still have about, 53 minutes left. So I think I can muster up something to talk about. Folks, in the interim, the call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Let's go to a quick groove. This is She by Jesse Johnson. About a minute. And then we'll get back to the discourse. Again, we started out late, but it is what it is. Hold on. All right, folks, once again, our apologies. These things happen every once in a blue moon. This is Afro Nerd. We are live. Trust me, we are live. Captain, are you there? We just got to go straight on.
I logged in, then I left. I went mobile, and then I came on back. You know, so, you know, when I didn't hear anything, let's go. Let's just go with it. Let's just go with it.
Yeah, it is what it is. Folks. We have a lot to talk about in a short length of time. As you folks know, I got to go to my gym regimen by 8:30. So it is what it is. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Captain, I want to talk about the Kenyan crises that occurred, I believe, the 21st through yesterday.
Yes.
And just a horror show. And I don't know if you heard about this, but we had our own local fiasco, not to the degree of Kenya, but there was a mall shooting at an upscale area in Long Island, Garden City, Long Island, which is a pretty, I can't even call it suburban, it's more ex-urban, it's a pretty wealthy area. And there was a lone gunman that shot two people, one critically, fatally, the other one I think might be holding on. Some kind of disgruntled worker walked in, shot two people. I heard it by, actually, Mr. Starks tweeted me, or I should say text messaged me, and told me that it was going on, a man of Asian descent. Not that it means anything, just as a descriptor. And I think he might still be on the run. I think everything's been locked off in trying to catch that can't call a gentleman when you shoot someone. But anyway, I want to try to get this clip going on, folks, and then we will unpack it briefly, this tragedy, that also, although it happened in Kenya, it has some of its roots right here in the good old U.S. of A. Frightening. All right, this is Anderson Cooper talking about the Kenyan mall attack. Hold on.
Saturday afternoon, shots and explosions are heard inside the busy upscale Westgate shopping mall in Nairobi, Kenya.
Westgate Mall is reportedly being held under siege. Shoppers are held by gunmen, and unconfirmed reports indicate that several people have been shot.
Eyewitnesses say an unknown number of gunmen burst into the mall through multiple entrances, firing shots at the ceiling and tossing grenades. At first, panicked shoppers assume it's a robbery. But then, eyewitnesses say, the gunmen tell all Muslims in the building to leave, according to some reports, asking them the name of the Prophet Muhammad's mother to prove their faith before they exit, which would leave the non-Muslims as hostages and targets.
At least 18 gunmen believed to be within the West Gate, having taken control of the mall. Right now, police, as we understand, have been able to gain access. We do understand the death toll now stands at least four people.
The gunmen move from store to store, shooting people randomly. Hundreds of terrified shoppers try to flee or attempt to hide inside stores and stairwells. Many escape however they can. Kenyan authorities storm the mall in pursuit of the gunmen, who've sequestered themselves somewhere inside the huge complex with an unknown number of hostages. The standoff has begun. Hallways and corridors turn into battlegrounds, with desperate shoppers caught in the midst of it. 30-year-old Bendita Malakia from North Carolina tried to run after she heard shooting, but ended up hiding for four terrifying hours before she finally escaped.
We stood up and we started to turn, and then there was a second, then we heard machine guns. And then we started to run, and there was a second explosion which knocked us on the ground.
As the Kenyan military takes control over more of the building, survivors begin trickling out.
Mom, everything's fine. Don't worry. You're fine.
By late Saturday afternoon, the terrorist group Al-Shabaab comes forward, claiming responsibility for the attack in a series of tweets, also indicating one or more of the gunmen may be American. Sunday, and the siege continues. By midday, the Kenyan government announces 59 are dead, more than 175 wounded. Among them, 26-year-old American Elaine Dang, who spoke by phone from the hospital.
I'm okay. I'm very grateful to be alive.
The gunmen are still inside the mall, still holding hostages. By Monday, day three of the standoff, the Kenyan government says their forces have taken control of most of the building.
The process of evacuating hostages have gone on very well. And we are very certain that, if any, there are very, very little hostages in the building.
But later in the day, heavy gunfire. 62 confirmed dead, and the fourth day of the standoff has now begun.
All right. Captain, I want you to take the lead on this one, and then I'll double back. I have a couple of things I want to say, and then we're going to move to the next topic, involving filmmaker John Singleton. Thank you, Jin Singh. Your opinion on this tragic event.
All right, you have a couple of things going on with this. First, when you're dealing with these mass shootings here in the United States, the result, the end result is the same, but the reasoning behind it a lot of times is entirely different. As you remember, the Batman shootings, that's what they called it, they're calling it. And just as the great Mr. Starks tweeted you about, you know, this random shooting, different reasons, but the result, the end result is the same. Now, when you're dealing with, and just to add, since we're by the by, the memetic virus will grow. Something I said before, this type of thing actually should be happening more, and it seems like it's starting to pick up. It's not that I want it to. It's not something that I want to happen more. It's just something that I notice. Now, when you're dealing with extremists, quote-unquote extremists, there's two ways to decipher this. One way is follow the money trail. That's the first thing. You follow the money trail, and you'll normally see what, who, what, when, and how, who is behind what's actually happening. You follow the money trail because you might have an extremist group out in front, but then there's something behind it, the magician curtain. You have that option. But then also you just have what is known as the extremist mindset. These individuals just do what they want to do when they want to do it. So you have both of that. You have both of those type of things happening with this. And with this, it's a tragic situation. So the first thing that has to be done, you have to follow the money trail. Follow the money trail. Then go from there. Then backtrack. Then after you follow all of those leads, then you might just find that these are just some bunch of crazy, totally crazy, self-driven individuals. But being at the type of weapons that they had from time, there has to be money coming somewhere. You see? That's the thing with this type of situation. You know? Yeah, so all of these things you have to look at. It's a tragic situation, extremely tragic. All right? And I think in circa 2013, as we go into 2014, 2015, we're going to see more of this happening, a lot more frequency with this. That's just my opinion. The memetic virus will grow. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd. Chop it up.
Yeah, a couple of things, ladies and gentlemen. I would definitely dovetail on what the great captain has talked about. There is a meme that's being established here, and the reasoning, of course, is different. However, I think that the root is the same, and the root is madness. And the root also has something to do with the American the human condition. The human condition really has not changed that much. We are still very barbaric. We just are. At the core of it, we're very barbaric. Just how we handle things, our belief in mysticism. This show right here is perhaps a very dangerous show, and I say that all the time because I hate to mention this gentleman, but I'm going to mention it for the sake of this conversation. Steve Harvey, who goes into God references and religiosity and that kind of thing, not knowing that or not caring that his listenership may not be comprised of completely Christians. You know, when you say God, whose God are you talking about? So I'm very reluctant. I would be very reluctant if I were in his position to go into religiosity. That's just my thing. But at the core of it, I'm just tired of folks who espouse mysticism. And these folks, to get into it, Al-Shabaab is a cell franchise group, just like McDonald's is a franchise. This is a Somali franchise of Al-Qaeda. And this is also retribution because of the Kenyan military actually deploying troops into Somalia. So as the captain has talked about, the reasoning is different. If you go into why this occurred, this has been going an ongoing struggle in that region for many years now, and this is retribution because of their attacks, Kenya's attacks on Somalia. How you end up going into a upscale, not that it would matter based on class, but into an upscale mall where pregnant mothers are there. You know, women, children. These were the victims. These were the victims. So when you wrap yourself up in violence, militarism, and also mysticism, this is what you get. This is what you get. I don't know how advanced we are as the human condition progresses. I don't know. We seem to have to go back. People have fairy tale thoughts. Imagine me deciding to just go crazy and kill folks because I'm defending the honor of Krypton. This is what this is. Make believe. I mean, let's be honest, Captain. Let's be honest. People, Allah and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't want to berate people's religion. I mean, if you are allowed to, obviously, you're allowed to worship however you see fit. But everyone has a different faction. The Christians have different factions within different satellite groups. You know, even within the religion, which is what you see how this goes down. In the Islamic religion, you have these warring factions. In Christianity, you have warring factions, all based on mystical thoughts, not really based on empirical data, not on the things that you could actually touch. I mean, and the folks that are just trying to get by their day, they have to be caught up in this. So it's scary that you're seeing people beheading folks. The young lady that was shot in the head, I believe in Afghanistan, she survived. But her only crime, according to those who are, again, these are religious folks. You know, I don't know of a God that would want to authorize killing people. But this is how insane it is. But this young girl, her only crime was that she felt that women should be educated, and she was shot in the head for that. And their God told them that's what you do. So, the best you can do, folks, try to keep your heads up, try to be have that third eye going on. I tell you one other thing too, Captain. Many years ago, I think that before we got hit as Americans, you would look at these things differently. You would say it's a tragedy, it's a horror, but I'm not really connected to that lifestyle. I don't, you know, it's almost like you're looking through glazed glass. It's not really real to you. But now, I guarantee Americans pay very close attention to this Kenyan attack. And not only that, these folks have been recruited, some of them, because we have a Somali presence in America, Somali Americans, young men are being recruited by Al-Shabaab to go over there or to wreak havoc. But what's to stop them, being that they have American citizenship, what's to stop them from doing this here? So now that we have been attacked, and also in Brooklyn in Boston more recently, I hope that wasn't a slip of the tongue, in Boston more recently, there's no way you can look at this through some kind of glazed glass. This is a real thing, because you can see yourself, especially that this happened in an upscale place. And I just told you the reasoning was different, but the terror was still there. Today, two people were shot in an upscale mall in ex-urban Long Island. And now a manhunt is out there for this young, well, not so young man that committed, I believe he was 62 years of age, that committed this heinous act. And he was a disgruntled worker. And then we had the fiasco in D.C. where 12 people were killed there, 12 or 13, correct, Captain?
Yes.
72 at last count, and perhaps and counting, at the Westgate Shopping Mall in Nairobi, Kenya. So it's unfortunate. My hearts go out in prayers. You know, what that means, because I'm an agnostic, but I do feel something, obviously. It's a horror show. I do feel that at some point, we're going to have to get real about this. And, you know, years ago, let's say 1945, you could drop a bomb or two bombs and just cut the nonsense. I don't know if that'll work this time. You know, the enemy was pretty clear, and they wore uniforms. They're not really wearing uniforms today. This is guerrilla warfare. This is a different – we're in a different era. All right, Captain.
Just to add quickly something you said pertaining to mysticism. That is the driving force with humanity. If you look, there's a billion Christians and supposed to be 1.7 billion Muslims at date, and then there's other people caught up in countless other religions, Hinduism, Satanism, and all other different type of things, Buddhism, and everything else. You could actually say nations are driven by mysticism, either via outside or interior. And this is the reality. That's the truth. It has always been that way, and it's the same way it is in the modern day. So you nailed it. You definitely nailed it because it's the truth, because we have the figures on it. We know how many people that are involved in this stuff that would call themselves Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Hinduism, Satanism, you know, Satanists, all of these type of things. So this is what actually is driving humanity. So you could actually say the occult drives humanity, and everything else forms around it. There you go.
You know, also, Captain, I think that to gravitate toward this kind of thing, I mean, there's another clip that I don't think I have enough time to play of a specific young man that his mother, from again, a Somalian woman in Minneapolis, this young man pretty much disappeared, and she called him, he called her from Somali, and it looked as if he was co-opted recruited by Al-Shabaab. And then at some point, a few weeks after that call, they saw a picture of him online with a hole in his head, dead. So unless we give up on mysticism, I'm not even making it a Muslim thing. Not even making it. It's all mysticism. The fact that people can talk about mystical things, talk about fantasy with such veracity as if it were real. I could talk about, Benjamin Franklin, because he was a real guy. I could talk about Benjamin Franklin. I could talk about Dr. King. I could talk about Elaine Locke or the Harlem Renaissance. I could talk about these things with pinpoint accuracy. I am always intrigued by people who are biblical scholars or people who could just talk about things that are mystical as if you could really prove this thing really happened. We could talk about Madame Curie because we know it happened. We know it happened. And yet we still have the mystics. We are still overrun by mystics, Captain. Our president, I suspect, who is a learned man, he has to kowtow to the mystics, knowing full well I doubt he sincerely believes his crap. But we are overrun by the mystics, and we have to kowtow to what they believe in. And what it really should boil down to, we should really be kowtowing to the realists. Being real, the realists, the scientists, the philosophers, those folks are oftentimes ignored. Those who believe in logic and education, there are very few folks that treat that as a religion because it's harder for some reason. It's harder to research and to study, but to believe in fairy tales is very easy. To believe in Santa Claus, very easy. And this is the human condition has been driven to this. And I always look at people and say, oh, my God tells you this, my God tells you that. Even Barack Obama, again, President Obama, when those poor children at Sandy Hook were killed, and he had to say that God took them home. God didn't take them home. God would not take children home with bullet holes in their body. But you have to say that. Just logically doesn't make any sense. And I've made this analogy before, Captain, where those poor souls, during the Haitian crisis when they had that earthquake, and you have children under rubble, they were praying to God, no one answered, but Tim Tebow can pray to God, and he gets a touchdown. It is what it is. I wish we could stop deferring to the mystics. That's all. All right. Because of time constraints, because we started out late, let's just go to the next topic. I want to get into this deal, and you straighten me out on this, Captain, actually. I do have a habit. Based on what I just spoke about, folks will probably think that he doesn't waver that much, and I don't. But on occasion, I pull back sometimes on how I really feel. Sometimes. Because I say to myself, I don't want to pull out the adamantium clause so harshly this time. I don't want to unsheathe my claws so much when I talk to folks, because if you really tell people how you really feel, you're going to hurt some feelings, and it could come off like sour grapes, or you're just an angry person just ranting. And that's not what it is. I do the PC thing myself. Sometimes I do it, but at some point the reality will come to the surface. What am I talking about? This is a dual-sided topic based on the same thing, entertainment. Who sent this to me? Might have been Sergio. I know Sergio has this on his great site, Shadow and Act. He has a blog posting on the talented actress, Jennifer Lewis. Well, you know what? Even before I even get to Jennifer Lewis, there's John Singleton. It's all in the same bag. Filmmaker John Singleton, you know him, folks, from Boys in the Hood in the early 90s. He had a string of rather popular movies, popular films. I think Shaft was like his last. I know he's done more after that. I think he did Too Fast, Too Furious. He's done some work, but one might say that his former muse, Ice Cube, was more successful than him. And John Singleton actually studied film. He went to UCLA Film School. That's the irony. Anyway, he came out recently and made some comments about white filmmakers, or as he sees it, there seems to be a trend that white filmmakers are making more and more black-themed movies, and he thinks that it's a dangerous affair. So let me, if I can find his comments, I want to give him his due respect. He made some comments. Okay, here it is. This is courtesy of The Independent out of the UK. He says, I'm going to read this real briefly. John Singleton, the Oscar-nominated director of Boys in the Hood, has warned of the latent racism in the Hollywood studio system, pointing to a troubling trend of hiring white directors to tell black stories. The Too Fast, Too Furious filmmaker said the commercial success of white-directed black films such as The Help, and baseball drama 42 was making it harder rather than easier for African-American writers and directors to find work. In an opinion piece for The Hollywood Reporter, Singleton wrote, The Help's $170 million domestic box office set a new paradigm for how Hollywood wants its black pictures, uplifting, sentimental, and inoffensive. It's no one individual filmmaker's fault. It reflects the latent racism that influences what gets made and what doesn't in the studio system. He claimed a screenwriter friend told him, Hollywood feels like it doesn't need us anymore to tell African-American stories. The friend believed the thinking behind it is, we voted for and gave money to Obama, so we don't need to hire any black people. This year, which has seen box office success for The Butler, critical acclaim for Fruitvale Station, and Oscar buzz for Steve McQueen's 12 Years a Slave, has been a banner year for black directors. But Singleton claims that studios will have been puzzled by the Butler success, saying the mindset remains, we want it black, just not that black. All right, Captain, what is he saying here? I see you have our friend from Chi-Town.
He made a legitimate statement, but at the same time, the other side of the coin is it's victimization, it's slave mentality. Listen, in the black community, there's plenty of money to do these kind of films. And there's plenty of talent to put out your own films. You know, the point is you want the Hollywood platform to do everything, and you want the powers that be to perceive you in a certain way, to cow down to you, you know, and it's not happening. So stop with that. Pull your resources together, which we definitely can do. The money is there. You understand? You don't necessarily have to spend $60 million or $30 million. You get very talented people. You put it out yourself. There you go. And then eventually, you know what's going to happen when you do that? The powers that be will have to come to you. That's what will happen. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, it'll go further on the Hollywood platform. We know that. We definitely know that. So you turn around, you spend less money. So he was making a legitimate statement. It is a legitimate statement. But at the same time, it's victimization, slave mentality, far as I'm concerned. You want Massa to perceive you in a certain way. Massa is not going to perceive you the way you want to be perceived. You have to perceive yourself. You have to do it yourself. That's just the way it works. That's just the way it always has worked. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd. Can you compete or cannot? Channeling Black Achievement. Can you compete or not?
That's what it is. Before we bring our friend for Chi-Town, because he is in the business, I'm sure he wants to weigh in on the Jennifer Lewis comments, the actress Jennifer Lewis, who is talented, and she said herself she's a talented MF-er. she said it rather provocatively, but we'll get into her as well. Just what you just said, Captain. And even to go deeper into it, it's the same old song and dance. It's the same old whining. Nigeria has a Nollywood, just as India has a Bollywood. It's safe to say that African Americans African Americans are perhaps the most successful out of the diaspora of black folk that are sprinkled throughout this world. There's billions, if not trillions of dollars that are being, you know, put out there to other communities, not our own. So and we said this countless times, we're not circulating the monies in our communities. It is an embarrassment that we do not have a real codified industry at this time. We're still begging for white folk to tell black stories. That, listen, if a white person is going to tell a black story, this whole thing is like should we allow white people to say the N-word? Should we allow white people to do black movies? Let me tell you something. We have no control over people. They're going to tell the stories the way they want to tell the stories. There should be an internal move. It should be an internal business structure of a black folk, a more pronounced one than it is. During the times of apartheid in this country, we had an infrastructure. We had baseball teams. As soon as we found out what the captain says, that the white man's water is colder, what happened to all these Negro League baseball teams? What happened to them? That's part of the problem. You know, I don't expect white people to. And you should not expect white people to respect your image per se, to actually create. You want them to create an image for you. It doesn't make any sense on its just logically, just saying it out loud. You want white people to give you a better product. You're going to have to create this product for yourself, ladies and gentlemen. By this time, we should have had our own distribution centers, our own movie theaters. I mean, we have shout out to Magic Johnson, but we have it. There's enough money and enough insight to start to do things on our own, where you are able to sustain these movies for yourself, and not even rely on a white audience, because if it's a good product, they're going to come anyway. That's the irony. But you should not have to rely on a white audience to be successful. There should have been an internal structure, and during the days of Oscar Michaud, during the 30s and 40s, when you had race movies, there are certain things that happened. I hate to say this, but there are certain things that happened during apartheid that we actually had right. We had no choice but to have an eternal black infrastructure where the money was actually circulating internally several times. Since you don't have that anymore, we're complaining. I just don't really agree with John Singleton on this one. Not completely. He's correct in some ways, but as a logical step, they're not going to make the movies you're going to want. It's always going to be off in some way, except for Quentin Tarantino. Except for him. He seems to get it. Everyone else is going to be something off. I was looking at something about 42. I never saw 42, but I know why I didn't see that thing. The actor that portrayed Jackie Robinson, I think I was listening to the W. Kamau Bell show. I think it was his show, his podcast. And someone had said, not him, but someone from his group had said that he didn't like that because he didn't like the portrayal because Jackie Robinson was a very articulate black man. He wasn't this gruff, rough around the edges guy. He was a genteel, educated black person who spoke very well, very Obama-esque. And we didn't see this on screen. And I saw it just in the commercials with the hip-hop soundtrack. I wasn't going to do it. All right, let's go to the callers. Serge, is that you?
Yes, this is me. Right.
Welcome, sir.
This, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Look, Singleton, of course, we posted the comment that he made, the piece that he wrote. It got some comments, not a whole lot, not more as much as I thought they would. The thing about Singleton is that his career right now, he's in what they call movie jail. He can't get a film made. You talk about going out and make your own film. Look at what Spike Lee did. Spike Lee went out to Kickstarter, wants to make this black love vampire movie. He raised the money in less than a month that he wanted to make. He's shooting right now. What does John Singleton want to do? First, we announced he was going to do a film about N.W.A. That fell through. Then he was one of the directors in contention to do a film about Tupac. That fell through. They're going to make a film about Tupac, but he's not directing it. Then he was going to make a dysfunctional love story in the hood. That fell through. His attempts at trying to cross over to do mainstream movies, he did Too Fast, Too Furious, which is considered the worst of the series. And then he did that film Abduction with that guy from Twilight. Nobody saw it. Nobody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he's very hypocritical because, you know, he talks about lack of opportunity for black directors, and yet he financed Hustle and Flow, which was written and directed by a white guy. He produced a film called Illegal Tender that was directed by a Hispanic director. Hey, how come you're not producing film for black directors? The problem with Singleton is that he's in a rut. If he went to Kickstarter to make a movie, to raise money to make a dysfunctional love story in the hood, you think anybody would give him money? What he's really saying is that the kind of movies I used to make, Hollywood's not interested in them. Actually, the audience is not interested in them anymore. But that's what he thinks he can do. That's all he thinks he can do. And now Hollywood is not interested in doing hood films anymore. Independent black filmmakers are not doing hood films anymore. You have Lee Daniels directing The Butler, which is going to do $120 million. You got Steve McQueen, the most acclaimed film of the year, 12 Years a Slave. He had Cassie Lemons doing her film version of Langston Hughes' Black Nativity. And you have a ton of independent black film directors who are making films. Singleton is still what? He still wants to do his hood movies?
Well, listen, Serge, you are correct about it. I mean, he's just kind of stale. But I still contend that even this, I'm really going to the side of what he said. Even if you discount what he says, we should have a self-sustaining black movie industry that has nothing to do with white folk by this time. I mean, the degree of black talent and black monies that are generated from entertainment. I don't know if you heard this morning. I'm going to go to, I think this might be BA. I'm going to bring him in a moment. I don't know if you heard this morning's Howard Stern show, but he was interviewing Floyd Mayweather. And
yeah, right.
Listen,
I know he is, yeah.
I'm not really a fan of Floyd. You know, I'm a fan of what boxing used to be. I know he's talented. I know people are raving about him. But when I saw him burn money in a club, that turned me off. And even Howard brought that to his attention. He said, it was just show, it wasn't real money. But then at the same time, he talks about how he bets $500,000, $1 million, $2 million. And Howard was saying, you know, listen, we saw Mike Tyson lose his money. He's struggling right now. You know, we're hearing you have hundreds of millions of dollars. He's talking about he has two G4 planes, one for himself, one for another, for his entourage. I mean, this guy's going to be broke. And when you hear someone who's able to gamble $1 million like it's a dollar or like it's $100, when $1 million could finance a film, you know, this is what I'm talking about. You have individuals who have the money, but they'd rather buy spinning rims and trinkets and encrusted Kellogg's boxes to put around their necks, which is real.
Which is why you're not going to see any kind of self-sustaining, self-financing black film company. The closest one actually there is. It's Tyler Perry. Tyler Perry finances his own movies. He finances his own films. They're released by Lionsgate. Lionsgate gets a cut, but Perry finances his movies.
Well, look what who was I thinking of? Let me bring BA because I don't want to encroach on his time. Hold on one second. BA, is that you?
Yes. Hello.
301.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Good evening, everyone. I'll be very quick. I think we're talking about high finance. You need banks, intellectual property, distribution. This is not Mayweather type money. You know, these are serious investments. Just speaking of movies, and I just don't think the African American community is focused there. We focus on being stars. And let me end with this, and I'll end here. Because I watched a documentary about a famed casting director a couple of months ago, and all I can say is it appears to me that black actors and directors are viewed matter-of-factly in Hollywood. You know, it's like they have no cachet, nothing to bring to the table. One of the directors talked about, casting directors talked about how she fought to get Danny Glover into Lethal Weapon. And I was like, I can't imagine Lethal Weapon without Danny Glover. But they didn't feel that way. So let me end there, and I appreciate it. I'll listen.
As always, BA, we appreciate it. Thank you.
You know, he has a point. I mean, he does have a point, and this is something that's been said many, many times. If you want to do what you've been talking about, you have to be serious about it.
True.
You have to be creating a film company, and distribution is a whole other can of worms altogether. It's one thing to finance the film; it's a whole other thing to distribute it. That means discipline. It means a lot of money. It means a serious plan. I haven't seen that yet. There is Ava DuVernay, and she's starting her African-American film movement where she is distributing small, independently made black films. She's doing that, but that's on a small scale. And as I said, as Tyler Perry before, he's financing his own pictures. And like I said, there's even a Kickstarter. Spike Lee has used that successfully, as many black filmmakers have used that. If John Singleton is serious, why don't he go to Kickstarter or Indiegogo and raise the money? Even, what's that guy's name? He's on Criminal Minds. The black actor.
Shamar Moore.
Yeah. He raised, believe it or not, he raised money to make some lame rom-com, you know, that he wants to star and produce. He raised the money to do that on Indiegogo. So, I mean, if he can do that, why isn't Singleton doing that?
Well, listen,
Is Singleton still bemoaning that Hollywood's not going to finance him?
Well,
because
well, listen, Well, hold on. I was listening to another Howard Stern interview with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. For those who are familiar with him, he was from The Third Rock from the Sun. He's an adult now, and he was also recently in The Dark Knight. And he's done a lot of indie work. He's in Looper, one of my favorite sci-fi movies, Looper. He was able to get some money going. I think he was able to get $3 million to make a short film.
He's got a film called Don John, right.
Right, John, rather provocative. James Franco, these actors who are halfway intelligent are able to get money to get seen by a studio. Like, they're able to kind of work in the system, but they're able to get money on a small level and say, okay, we're going to start you with this little thing. And then, see, we had more black folk doing that even. But I think they would have tossed a bump in the club and be seen. Which is what talking about.
James Franco has three movies. He's got three movies he's directed already.
Yeah.
Some of them have been shown in film festivals. He did a film version of William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, which is one of the classic novels. That's the festival route. He's got another movie. He also has some kind of gay film that he's made. That even though he claims he's not, but he's made one. They're doing the festival rounds, and he still is acting in movies, and he's appearing on sitcoms. And I said, what does he have time even to make these movies? But he's raising the money to go out and doing it.
Somehow he's able to get go to school too, and get PhD and degrees. So this guy and get laid somehow.
I think there's probably four of them. Maybe he's an alien. I don't know how he does it. But
Hold on, because I want to also go, because we got 8 minutes. I want to have you on for one more thing. I want to throw this Jennifer Lewis thing, which was also on your blog as well, on your site. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with her, she's a pretty well known veteran actress. You would definitely see her as a character actor, actress. And she said some rather profound things at the Urban World Forum because of the release of her latest film, Baggage Claim, which is, to me, Baggage Claim is like all this other stuff. It looks like a Soul Plane Part 2. But, yes, you know, the meme of these folks, you know, Serge, you can probably speak more succinctly about this, but it seems to be like the same kind of themes. We're not that prolific. We're not prolific. We're doing the same product. It's ham and eggs every day with black folk, from what I see. Let's go to this quick clip of her waxing. I was engrossed, but I'm not on the bandwagon per se. And I'll explain why. Hold on.
Listen to me. You have to love what you do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
With your entire molecular structure. And find your passion. You've got to be in it to win. I gave up many times. And I, let me be honest with y'all. You can laugh if you want, but I'm a talented motherfucker. And wait, listen to me, and I know it. You want to know why? Because I was 5 years old. I sang my first solo in church. I looked at the reaction of the congregation. I stood there with my thumb in my mouth saying to myself, this is life. I knew my passion right away. I knew it before that. But that's what you've got to find. The elevator to success is broken. Take the stick.
Yeah.
Read on people who are in this business who got it bad. Where they at? No. I mean that with compassion in my heart. I'm going to stand out. I don't think I've said this on stage before, but I'm going to say it tonight. And take it, baby. Run with it. You can have anything. Anything you want, you can have. I can. I came from poverty. I don't know if y'all know that. I used an outhouse until I was in the ninth grade. And to add insult to injury, that outhouse was across from the school. So I was teased every day. That's how poor I was. And I was hungry as a kid. Got five bathrooms now. But no. That's not the point. The point I'm saying to you tonight is this. You know, I'm funny. I can make you laugh all day, but here's the real shit, y'all. Speaking of shit. I do speak in Proverbs, and I'm not ashamed of it, but you do your best and you leave the rest. Don't let life drive you crazy. You drive that motherfucker. It's yours. You understand? You're in charge. You can wait for something outside of you to help you if you want. You better look in the mirror. Look in the mirror and love what you see, or stand there until you love it. If the tears come, let them come. But stand there. That's what I want to give you guys. I don't care what profession you go in. Don't think it's going to come overnight. It's not. Your job is to do the work. Who am I? Because, honey, if you don't know who you are in the back of that limousine, it doesn't matter. Shit, I'm done. Y'all got to pay me.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is my life.
All right, folks. Jennifer Lewis, kicking it. I will say this much. Again, you know how we operate, folks. Excuse the expletives. I mean, she went into a little bit of blue talk, blue speech. The captain had to straighten me out about that, though, because I got lulled in. You know, this was being emailed to me. And, you know, when people get a little sassy, when black women get into a little sassiness and get into the sapphire role, you kind of get engrossed. She's not a bad-looking woman. You know, I find her attractive. She's a mature woman. She has her hair naturally now, so I dig that now. So she's kind of feeling herself maybe. But, you know, at its core, captains say, you know what? This is the make-me-feel-good thing you always talk about. And it's a little bit of histrionics. Even though what she said, I cannot necessarily deconstruct. You know, the elevator to success is broken. Take the stairs. That is true. Even with what we're doing now. Even with what AfroNerd and AfroNerdism is about, as long as we've been on air, this is a long-distance run. It's not a short run. It's not a sprint.
I'm sorry. Can I just say something real fast?
Hold on, Serge. We got about 2 minutes. She said is correct, but my problem is that at the end of the day, we can't get lulled in by some of these folks. She just left this. This baggage claim movie that seems to be the same old, same old. You know, you didn't exactly leave Black Orpheus or something. You know, it is what it is. It's baggage claim. But now you want to be profound.
Real fast, you know, we posted this thing and everybody went crazy. I think everybody must be 25 years or younger because the speech she gave was one of the most cliched speeches I've ever heard. You got to be in it to win it. Take the elevator. You know, the elevator is closed. Take the stairs. I mean, I've heard that when I was 10 years old.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, she was just saying the same stuff. She just repackaged it and gave it to an audience who evidently has never heard this before. And, you know, I guess it inspires you, fine. But what she said, I bet your bottom dollar, she said before in other panels. This just happened to be taped by somebody.
Well, she's entertaining.
What she did. She gave a performance because she walked off. If you see the video, she walks off the stage, down the aisle, and everybody's standing and applauding her. It's an act.
It's one of Tyler Perry's plays.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the problem. I'm tired of minstrels, Sergio. I want real people. I want real people.
And,
so,
and right, you do have a point.
Hold on, because we got under a minute now. You know what? We're gonna have to close this because we got to do it. We'll come back Saturday. I promise you, folks. I got to get to the gym. Unfortunately, we started out late, so we will repackage this. We will take the stairs. coming this Saturday and do this again. Serge, as always, sorry about that. We just don't have the time. Cap, let's get on out of here. This is The Character. This is what I mean. The Character by Morris E. Day. The Character, as apropos as I can be. We'll do it again Saturday. Let's get into it. Morris Day.
Yeah.